Welcome to the Holistic Plastic Surgery Show. I'm Dr. Anthony Yoon, also known as America's Holistic Plastic Surgeon. If you want to look and feel amazing, but ideally don't want to go under the knife to get there, then you, my friend, are in the right place. What skincare ingredients are super gentle for the skin, but great at revitalizing it and improving the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles? Well, those would be bakuchiol and peptides. Bakuchiol comes from the bobchi plant, and it's been used in Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine for hundreds of years. It's been shown to have similar effects as retinol in improving the appearance of the skin. Peptides are proteins that send cellular signals to support collagen production in the skin. They're some of the most popular ingredients to smooth the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles. Well, I've combined these two powerful ingredients into my Yoon Beauty Peptide and Bakuchiol Moisturizer. Also filled with antioxidants, this product will leave your skin feeling revitalized and renewed. Check out our Yoon Beauty Peptide and Bakuchiol Moisturizer at yoonbeauty.com and use the coupon code PODCAST to get 15% off your first order. There's a link in the podcast caption below. On this week's podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Tabitha Barber. She is a functional gynecologist, and we're going to talk all about functional gynecology. We're going to talk about her new book, Fast to Faith, and we're going to cover things such as, do women need to fast differently than men? What are the benefits of fasting to a woman's health? We'll talk about the difference between traditional gynecology and functional gynecology. We'll talk about the fact that gynecologists are surgeons and not necessarily hormone experts. We'll discuss why your period, if you're a woman listening to this, is your fifth vital sign. And we'll talk all about simple steps that you can take to regain your health using her 40-day Fast to Faith program. But before we do that, I'd like to give a quick shout out to Snook TEA. Snook TEA left a nice review of this podcast on iTunes, stating social media to podcasts. I recently started following Dr. Yoon on Instagram, and I fell in love with his page. Thank you so much, Snook TEA, for this nice review of the podcast on iTunes. And if you've been enjoying this podcast, if you can leave a rating or review, it definitely helps me spread the word. Okay, so let me introduce Dr. Tabitha Barber. Dr. Tabitha Barber has dedicated her life to giving women a voice and a choice when it comes to their health and well-being. Overcoming struggles as a young girl, including self-esteem challenges and the hurdles of being a high school dropout and teenage mother, she emerged as a successful physician through faith and perseverance. Her unwavering commitment to women's health is evident through her triple board certifications in obstetrics and gynecology, menopause, and functional medicine. As the driving force behind her thriving medical practice, Dr. Tabitha and her team provide compassionate support and care to women nationwide. Through the Gutsy Gynecologist Show, her Gutsy GYN supplement line, and her book, Fast to Faith, she shares insights into the importance of gut health, hormone balance, mindset, and, most importantly, nourishing the soul to truly help and become whole. I think you're going to really love this discussion that we have today, all about women's health and about functional gynecology, fasting, and so many great topics. Here is my good friend, Dr. Tabitha Barber. Let's get started. Thank you so much for joining me today, Tabitha. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited to be here, Tony. We have such similar paths, and I think we've learned a lot of the same lessons, right? So it's always good to talk to like-minded souls.
Well, I'd like to start because my audience probably doesn't know a lot about you, and you have a very interesting backstory, and you do cover some of this in your book, Fast for Faith. But I'd love to hear your story about where you came from, because you've written actually a book about that as well.
Yeah, so I love to share my story because oftentimes people will tell me they feel like they're not capable of doing things that they want to do or changing their life or taking back control of their health, that kind of stuff. And I'm just an example that that's not true. You can honestly create any kind of life that you deserve and want because I'm a high school dropout. I was pregnant at 16 years old. I even got married in 11th grade to my high school sweetheart. great heart. And I was a terrible student, but I had a very traumatic delivery. And through that, I realized that I wanted to help women have a better health outcome. I wanted them to have a voice and a choice when it came to their health, because I didn't have that. The doctors didn't explain anything to me. Everything was just kind of done to me. I was treated like a second-class citizen, and it was very disheartening, right? So I made it my life's mission to figure out how to get my crap together, how to get good grades. And I realized that if you want something, you just have to ask for help. Like, I went and I asked my high school teachers, help me get ready for the SAT, help me apply to college, help me with my FAFSA, all the things my parents didn't know how to do because my mom was also a high school dropout. And so you just have to ask for help and believe in yourself. And I had, you know, my strong faith. So I always knew God was carrying me through. And that was probably my biggest reason that I was so successful. But I would encourage people to just never settle, you know, don't become complacent, especially when it comes to your health, because you know this, I studied my butt off. I went through all that training to the point where I burnt myself out. As a surgeon, we are called to like ignore our bladders and skip meals and to put everybody else first and to perform surgery sleep deprived and do all these crazy things that go against being a human, essentially. And you get to the point where it's not sustainable, right?
So you drop out of high school, you have a baby at the age of 16, and then you have an epiphany, really, as you're being treated as this second-class citizen by the medical system, that you want to basically treat patients differently. And when did you decide to become an obstetrician-gynecologist?
That was kind of my dream desire deep inside, but I didn't think I could be a doctor. So I went to school for nursing, and I had a professor who really believed in me, and he showed me that I was capable of more. And I did end up applying to medical school, and I got into the one school I applied to, and I did awesome. Like, I got all A's. I was at the top of my class, and it was actually quite surprising.
So you probably, I don't know if you know this, but we went to the same university for medical school. You went to the osteopathic school. I went to the allopathic school. And for our listeners, the difference is an allopathic school is an MD approach, and an osteopathic is a DO. But as first year students, we took all the same classes pretty much together, although the DOs did have some extra classes on manipulations and things like that that we didn't have. What year did you graduate?
So I was in medical school from 2001 to 2005.
And I finished medical school in 98. So I was a little bit before you.
Just missed so then you.
So you go to residency, you become an obstetrician and gynecologist, you're practicing out in West Michigan. What happens that caused you to look at medicine very differently? I mean, you're in your book, you describe how you are really, it's kind of like the standard OBGYN practice. My dad was an OBGYN, and, you know, he birthed babies at all times at night. You know, it was very common for him that I would go to bed and he would heading to bed around that same time. And then I would wake up in the middle of the night, let's say, to go to the bathroom, and he'd be gone. Or I get up in the morning to get ready for school, and he would have just come back home from being in the hospital for a few hours. It is definitely, it's a difficult lifestyle. And at what point did you decide that this was not the direction you wanted to go, and you started pivoting in a different direction as a gynecologist?
Well, it was actually my own health crisis. So not only was I struggling, I had no memory. I relied on my medical assistant to tell me the names of patients I had delivered the day before and to help me finish my notes. My memory was just gone from sleep deprivation. I was overweight. I was exhausted, but I had this chronic back pain. And it got to the point where there were days that I couldn't walk away from the OR table. Like, the surgery was done, and I just had to stand there, bloody hands and all, bent over, trying to move my back and walk. And I was in a delivery where I got stuck. And that was kind of my breaking point. So I went to see an orthopedic surgeon, and he said, yeah, you have not only a herniated disc, but it's ruptured. And that's why you're having all this pain. And so I did surgery. I thought, how can I possibly even take 6 weeks off of work. This seems crazy. Like, that's how busy my life was, is I couldn't imagine taking care of myself for 6 weeks. But my office manager, everybody just kind of forced me to. After that, I came back my third night on call. I re-injured and I couldn't move. I was stuck in another delivery. It was Christmas Eve. I went back to the surgeon. He said, well, back surgery is like Lay's potato chips. You can't have just one. And Tony, I was like, time out. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm 40 years old. This is crazy. You're not putting rods and screws in my back. Like, there has to be another way. And I took 4 months off of work and I just dedicated myself to figuring out a new way. And that's when I found the world of functional medicine and Mark Hyman and all of these things. And I realized, oh my gosh, I have been so isolated from the rest of the world. I've been in this culture of sick care medicine and disease and diagnoses. And there's a whole world of health and wellness out there that I knew nothing about. And it turns out it mattered what I was eating and the fact that I wasn't sleeping or managing, you know, my stress appropriately. Like, all this stuff mattered. And once your eyes are opened, you can't go back. Like, I learned all this stuff and I wanted to use it on my patients. Unfortunately, being in the conventional medical system, they are a business. And I had 3 or 4 managers above me who insisted I see more patients, do more surgeries, deliver more babies. They treated me like I was not human, and I reached my breaking point and I left.
So you ended up leaving and you start your own practice as a functional medicine physician?
Yeah, that was really scary. You know, they tell me every day in my practice, like, oh, my job's miserable, but I can't possibly change it. And it's like the biggest reason they're having gut issues or hormone imbalances. And they give me every reason why they can't leave their job. Well, I'll tell you, I left my salary job as a once girl on Medicaid and food stamps. I left a good salary job, a 401k, all that security, because it was the right thing for my health and for my patients to do. And I went off and I opened my own practice. And now I run a successful virtual medical practice and I see women all over the country and help them balance their hormones and heal their gut. But I had to believe in myself and start from scratch, right?
So you consider yourself as a functional gynecologist. What then is the difference between a functional gynecologist and a traditional gynecologist?
The gynecologists are actually surgeons. A lot of doctors are. Patients don't realize that. We think that they're women's health experts because that's what we say. But I spent 4 years learning how to do a hysterectomy 4 different ways and C-sections and procedures. I didn't study the intricacies of the endocrine system and hormone balances. I learned basic prescriptions for menopause, estrogen replacement, like all the standard stuff. But I never really understood how the gut affected our overall health. And I should have, because I was actually a robotic surgeon and I did a lot of stage 4 endometriosis surgery. So I would go in the abdomen and I would spend hours peeling bowel off of ovaries, uterus, fallopian tubes, all this scar tissue that was being created from this disease process. And it should have dawned on me that the gut must have been involved because it was physically there, but nobody in the conventional space talks about that. And so when I started studying functional medicine, which is like root cause, why is this happening medicine, I realized endometriosis is an inflammatory process. It's happening because of the chemicals being produced in the gut that are spilling into the abdomen and going into the ovaries and the uterus and the fallopian tubes. And that kind of was an epiphany day for me. Like, oh my gosh, we have it backwards. Like, we think that the pelvic organs are to blame when it's really the gut that is driving this endometriosis issue. And then I started to learn that, oh my gosh, it drives thyroid issues. It drives adrenal issues. The gut really is the gateway for everything. Acne, eczema, mood conditions, depression. That was a game changer. So now I heal the gut first and foremost when I'm dealing with GYN issues. And that almost always gets women back into balance as opposed to conventional gynecology, which I call band-aid medicine, where we're trying to cover up symptoms or get rid of a certain complaint. Like you say, my period is painful, my period is heavy. Okay, I'm going to give you something to get rid of that complaint, but I'm actually not fixing the problem causing that complaint. So big difference.
When you're talking about the health of the gut, you know, this is something that is very interesting because, gosh, maybe 15 years ago, you talk about the microbiome and how the health of the gut impacts the rest of the body. And a lot of functional medicine, alternative medicine physicians were talking about it back then, but the traditional doctors were not. And now traditional medicine is coming around to that, and doctors are talking more and more about the microbiome. But still, a lot of doctors are poo-pooing things like taking supplements or taking a probiotic. You have somebody who comes in, and let's say they have endometriosis. You talk to them about helping to heal the gut as a first step. What are some of the things that you would recommend, like concrete things for them to do that could help them in this situation when their issue is going to be with their female organs, but you're now talking about the gut? Like, how would you explain that to them? And what are some things that they could do so that they can get an understanding that, wow, we're on the right track here?
Yeah, there really are some basic things. And this is the same thing that you preach about. Like, if you want healthy skin and a healthy physical body, or if you want to heal your endometriosis and have healthy, normal, painless periods, it's all kind of the same. You have to do some basic foundational stuff. And that is eating clean, anti-inflammatory foods. I call them God foods or faith foods because they were grown naturally. They have a mother, or they came from the earth. They're supposed to go in our body and be digested, and not frankenfoods, not foods that we produce in a lab that are made up foods, or they've been so depleted of their nutritional value and distorted that our body just gets angry when it eats it. So every time we eat something like Doritos or processed foods out of boxes and bags, any of that kind of stuff, it causes this inflammation. And women feel it. They tell me, like, I feel puffy. My rings don't fit. I feel sluggish. I feel tired. That is because you're fueling your body with the wrong thing. And so that's number one basic. Like, you have to get back to an anti-inflammatory diet. Like, eat clean, healthy animal proteins, eat vegetables, limit your grains and things. Unfortunately, grains have been so genetically modified in this country that our body sees it as foreign a lot of the time and doesn't even know how to process it. And I see this every day in my practice with gluten. Gluten is the main protein in wheat, and a lot of women have gluten reactions. They have non-celiac gluten sensitivity, and it shows up as acne, depression, weight gain that they can't get rid of, autoimmune processes that are uncontrolled, like Hashimoto's, which I myself have had since 17. And the list goes on and on. So you could do something super basic, like just don't eat gluten and dairy and sugar for 4 weeks and see how you feel. Like, it's a simple, you know, thought. It came out with Whole30 forever ago, but it actually works. It's because those things are so inflammatory and it drives all those disease processes in your pelvis. So that's number one. And number two, which you also love, fasting, right? Like, this is my thing. You and I went to a surgical residency, and probably one of the first things that we learned was NPO, how to write an order to tell a nurse not to feed our patient after surgery. They need to heal. They need to divert those resources and allow the body to go in and do its natural, innate healing processes. And when you feed yourself, you use up those resources and you slow down that healing process. So fasting is probably, well, it's cheapest, but it's the quickest way to, like, start to shift what's going on in your body and divert resources, kill off bad bacteria that's overgrown yeast. And most women feel that shift pretty quickly. Like, you know, a week or two of really getting into a fasting practice, they're like, oh my gosh, I feel like a different woman. My brain functions again. I'm not swollen. I'm not bloated. I'm sleeping better. I'm not waking up at 2 a.m. So it's incredible what fasting can do for you.
So how did you, because you've got a new book called Fast to Faith, and in the book you talk all about the benefits of fasting. How did that come about for you that you started fasting? Because, You know, we both know that in the thousands of years that humans have been in existence, that fasting has been a huge part of lifestyle, whether you're Christian, whether you're Muslim, other religions, the vast majority of them do use some type of fasting as a fairly regular component of life. Now, more recently here in the United States, we've pretty much gotten rid of that idea. And the thought for some people of not eating in a span of 12 hours or 16 hours is just horrifying to them. Like, oh my gosh, how can I not wake up and eat right away? Or how can I not eat right before I go to bed and really every couple hours be putting something in my mouth? How did you come around to this idea that, wait a minute, fasting is a big key to health, especially health for women?
The second time I re-injured my back, I was in bed for over 5 days and before I got back to the surgeon. And just laying there, I think maybe by day three or day four, I was like, wow, I haven't eaten anything. I feel so weird. Like my stomach's really empty, but I don't feel as inflamed. My back is feeling better. And so I started thinking about my training and thinking about all the ways that our body has this innate intelligence to heal. And God actually said to me, like, look at the word. And I opened the Bible and I just started looking for passages on fasting. And what I quickly came to realize was Jesus taught this practice of not only saving people from their mental and emotional issues, but physically saving people, like healing the blind and the lame and the deaf and things like that. But he also taught this practice of fasting as the quickest way to reconnect with your creator and hear from him. So here I was laying in bed, crying and begging God to like, take away my pain, fix my life. Like he's a genie in a bottle or something and magically he's going to fix me. And what I came to understand was I need to do my part. I need to be more mindful of how I'm treating my body and what I'm doing with it. And so I realized that fasting gave me so much mental clarity. It was healing my body, but it was healing my mind. It was clarifying what was happening, and I was reestablishing that connection. And it was from there that over the next few years, this just kind of blossomed. And I got to a point where I realized, because I was teaching fasting as an online program to my patients, and they would have results, they'd do great, and then they would go back to their old ways. It was like a diet. And when I started incorporating the fasting into the program, that's when the transformations took place. That's when they changed and became different women and lived into a new identity of, oh, fasting is just a way of life. Fasting is part of what keeps me healthy, and I can rely on God to get me there. And that's been transformational. So it's been this like crazy journey.
It's interesting because when you read books by anti-aging scientists they basically have all pretty much come to the determination that the number one thing that you can do to live a longer life and to get the longevity genes going is to calorie restrict. But calorie restriction is very, very difficult, especially when you're doing it long term. The second thing that you can do is fast, is take time where you allow your gut to rest, where you allow your body, and this is something that's in your book, its processes of autophagy to take hold. And for all those people who are listening and you know, you've read my book, Younger for Life. You've maybe heard some of my podcasts talking about autophagy. That's a huge, huge subject for me as well. Can you describe just in your own words, Tabitha, how you describe autophagy to your followers and your patients and how that can impact your overall health as part of fasting?
Yeah. So many women are out there afraid of cancer, especially breast cancer, right? And so they're afraid to talk about hormones. They're afraid to consider hormone replacement therapy. But honestly, cancer is a metabolic disease. What's happening is the cells themselves in the breast tissue have gone rogue. They are no longer behaving the way that they're supposed to be behaving. And for some reason, they have gone on to develop into something that they shouldn't, because your body has not been able to do the process of autophagy, of removing those cells once they are done. And so what I explain to women is, when you go into a fasted state and you get into ketosis and you're no longer like using your digestive tract for all your resources, your body steps into this process of cleaning house. Let's go around and find all the broken DNA and bad cells throughout our body and get rid of them, eat them up, get rid of them. We can recycle some of the proteins that we've made or the nutrients, but overall that cell has to get destroyed and removed from your body. And if you don't ever allow that process to happen, those cells start to multiply and act crazy, essentially. And so that's what drives cancer. And honestly, cancer was like not even a normal word in our language just 50 years ago. You know, I remember, this is dating me, but the movie Beaches, like back in the 80s, where they're like, ooh, cancer. It was like a four-letter word. Nobody talked about it because it was so rare and so scary. And now everybody's got it. And it's because of the constant insult that our body is receiving from all the environmental toxins, from all the Frankenfoods, from the nonstop ingestion of foods and the high sugar diets. Like, we are creating these problems in our body, and we need to take ownership and responsibility over it, because our bodies are actually created to always heal and always be in homeostasis. Like, if you cut your arm wide open, it will heal. It won't heal if you pick the scab and keep picking at it, or if you get it all dirty and get it infected. But if you leave it alone and stop insulting it, your body will heal you back up. So we have to stop insulting our body with all these crazy fake foods and this over busy life, which is just another joke, and really just help our support our body do what it's supposed to do. And that's how you prevent cancer.
I love what you're saying, because all of this completely is in line with the concept of autorejuvenation and the fact that our bodies have these massive regenerative abilities to rejuvenate themselves. You know, it's the same thing of when we take somebody who overall is relatively healthy, we perform an operation on them with the expectation that they're going to heal fine afterwards. And they typically do, because once again, our body has this innate healing ability. But just like you're saying, what we put in our mouth, our environment, how we live our lives is impacting that and suppressing that autorejuvenation ability of our bodies, that regenerative abilities. And so the goal, I think, of your program, of my program, is to unlock our body's regenerative potentials once again, so that you can heal and you can be healthy once again naturally. So I'd like to kind of shift gears and let's talk a bit more about your book, Fast to Faith. In your book, you have a 40-day program that I found to be really interesting. And I saw corollaries of what you recommend in your program and what we have in our 21-day jumpstart. But can you explain your 40-day program? I know there are numerous kind of phases to it, but let's start with that first phase of your 40-day Fast to Faith program.
So the entire concept is about retraining your body to be able to get into a fasting state and feel good. Because every day I hear women say, no, I get hangry, I get jittery, I can't go without eating, I'm just a hot mess. Like, that means you've lost your metabolic flexibility. You've lost your ability to burn carbohydrates or glucose for fuel. You're only using that, and you've lost your ability to burn fats for fuel and get into ketosis. But you should be able to do both. You should be able to go back and forth between eating carbohydrates and using those, or eating fats and using those for fuel. And so it's a stepward progression of helping women get rid of the snacking, break up with sugar, get back into regular meal eating, and then tighten up your eating window, and then get to a point where you could do a dinner-to-dinner fast and feel good and have mental clarity. And then it does progress to a three-day water fast for those who really want to stimulate some autophagy and really get that physical healing and that deeper relationship with God. Some people really need a lot of mental, emotional healing from, you know, stuff they're going through, and that can really deepen that relationship. So the distinctive piece with Fast to Faith is that we use a practice called Lectio Divina. It's an ancient practice of meditating on scripture. So each day there is a scripture that has been chosen, and I show you the four stages of meditating on it, and it really only takes 5 or 10 minutes. So there's actually no excuse to not do it. It's really short, but you read the word as if it's a living, nourishing thing that is God talking to you for this time period in your life. That's how amazing the Bible is. It's not about men thousands of years ago. I mean, it's a great history lesson, but it is a living, nourishing word. And so you can get so much clarity about what's happening in your life and get some guidance on how to maybe redirect your path and make different choices and get control of your monkey mind, because so many of us just have wrong thinking patterns that we need to shift and change. And that is how we can really change our relationship with food, how we choose our food, using food as an emotional crutch, all the reasons that we get stuck with these physical problems. So we need to really have a different mindset, and meditating on the word is actually the game changer for that. So that's the biggest reason.
They start out with the program, and I know you don't go straight into a several day water fast from the beginning. What are some of the first steps that they would take before they go into those types of things? Obviously, you know, you talked about the meditations. It's great because every day you have a separate one every day that kind of matches kind of where the people are at. But what do they specifically do with food or not eating in that first segment? Was it like 10 days, I think, is the first?
Yeah, it's 10 days,
section?
Phase one, the sunrise phase. So it's like the sun is coming up, you're seeing things in a whole new light, right? And so you are realizing, is the food I'm putting in my body actually nourishing me and helping me be well, or is it contributing to the problem? And so I list all the foods, like here's the Frankenfoods, here's the faith foods, let's clean out your pantry, let's make some different choices, and here's why. Because if you don't understand why you're doing something, you're not going to stick with it. So that's a big part of the book, is really explaining to women why sugar is a problem, why gluten can be a problem, why dairy can be a problem, and then giving them new ideas, new alternatives. And we have recipes for every single day, because some women really want it to be that simple. They're like, tell me exactly what to eat, I'll do it. And those women are super successful. But we also just have an eating plan, like we're going to do low carbohydrate for these days, and we're going to focus more on protein and fats for these days. And I teach women how those different macros get processed in the body and create different amounts of energy and give you different resources. Because women tell me, well, I ate and I'm hungry an hour again later. And it's because they're not eating satiating foods. Fat actually gives you way more calories and ATP than carbohydrates do. So that kind of stuff can be really helpful to understand.
At what point in the 40-day Fast of Faith program do they start the time-restricted feeding, essentially where you drop the eating window down to 8 hours, if I remember right? When do they work that in? And the other question I have is, you know, we talk a lot about, there's been a lot of talk lately, one of our good friends, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, has been on the forefront of this, is getting sufficient amount of protein, especially women after menopause. And if you are fasting and you're only having, let's say, one or two meals a day, is that sufficient for you to get enough protein so that you can prevent sarcopenia, or a basically reduction of your muscle mass as you get older?
Yeah. So this I actually talk about toward the end of the program as we go into more of a maintenance phase, because protein can prevent you from losing weight. Part of, you know, the reason women want to get into ketosis and do more of a ketogenic diet is because of the quick weight loss. But you want to do it smart. You don't want to lose muscle mass. And so it is important to be getting enough protein when you are eating. And where I see women really struggle with fasting is when they're fasting with a standard American diet. So they're only eating one or two meals a day, but when they are eating, they're only getting 10, 15 grams of protein, and then they're getting that high carbohydrate intake again, because that is the standard American diet. It's a lot of processed carbohydrates. So if you plan your meals around a higher protein, higher fat content, you'll stay satiated longer and you won't have to eat as often. I will say Dr. Lyon pushes a lot more protein than I typically recommend when you're trying to lose weight, because it can stop you from that immediate weight loss. Long term, yeah, once you've lost that weight, you need that protein to build that muscle and sustain it, because muscle is metabolically active and it helps you manage your blood sugars and keep that blood sugar under control so you don't regain the weight. That's probably one of the biggest issues with Ozempic and semaglutide and those things, is women are losing muscle mass. And so that weight loss isn't sustainable unless they go and they build that muscle back on. So, and protein's really important for all these other processes in the body too, not just muscle mass. Like, we make proteins from protein. They're like little Lego blocks. And so we make enzymes and we do all these other processes with protein. So that's definitely an important factor. And once you get through the 40 days, then the conversation becomes, okay, have you reached your weight loss goals? Are you trying to build muscle? What are your long-term goals? I would love women to always be in a state of diversity and change, because if you do the same thing all the time, if you eat the same way, the same foods, the same time, your body, what, like I said, is always trying to be in hemostasis. It's always trying to be in balance. And so it will just balance whatever you're doing. So diversity, changing things up, keeps your body actively healing and adjusting to what's going on. We need a diverse gut microbiome, which means we need to change up how we're eating through our seasons. We need to eat different fruits and vegetables depending on the time of the year. And we need to eat at different times of the day. So I don't recommend, like, you should just always stay in the same window 24/7 and never change. That changing things up causes the body to get back into autophagy, gets back into stimulation of like, oh my gosh, she's working us out. We need to adjust once again. So I see it all the time. Women, like, they get on this low calorie, same diet, and then they wonder why they're stuck. It's because you're doing the same thing and your body has adjusted to that new standard, that new baseline.
So what specifically, you know, we started this discussion talking about the microbiome and how you realize very early on the effects of the microbiome on even women's uterine issues and endometrial issues and stuff like that. How does fasting impact the microbiome in general, or even more specifically?
So it does a few things, and it's so cool because our intestines, which only have one layer of cells between the food that we're breaking down in our intestines and our bloodstream, they get destroyed on a regular basis, but they regenerate or rejuvenate every 24 to 48 hours, as long as you stop insulting them and destroying them. So the key is, if you're going to have an insult, say you went out, you drank too much alcohol, you ate some really bad foods, you need time to allow those intestinal cells to heal, because they are the gateway into your body. Food is actually not inside of you until it goes through those cell walls into your bloodstream. So it's still technically outside of you. So fasting is the quickest way to allow those cells to heal, because nothing is coming in and insulting them. Parasites and bad bacteria, pesticides from our food, chemicals, plastics that got melted in our food from that hot coffee, you know, container, or that microwave vegetable dinner we had, or whatever. And so that's probably the biggest benefit, is that it allows leaky gut to start healing. Some people have chronic leaky gut, which is a bigger deal. You need active intervention, but we all get it like on a regular ongoing basis, and we just want to heal that. The other piece is the bacteria and the yeast and everything that's living in our gut. We actually have an entire ecosystem, and there's more bacteria DNA in our body than human DNA. So we're actually more foreign than we are us, but we don't realize that. And they are running the show. They are helping us absorb our vitamins and make some of our vitamins and our neurotransmitters, which are, you know, things in our brain that help us regulate our mood. And all of these things are based on the microbiome. And so when you fast, the bad guys start to get starved and killed off, especially yeast. They love sugar. They love carbohydrates. So if you starve them, they'll die off. they might not die off completely. That's not really realistic, but they get down to low enough levels where they're not running the show anymore. And a lot of times cravings for sugar or bad foods are just chemical responses from those bad guys to our brain. Like, hey, give us more of that. And so we get mad at ourselves like, oh, we have no willpower or we suck or we can't do it. But it's because we got the wrong bacteria living in there running the show. And so that can shift pretty quickly with fasting. And that's pretty cool. That's one of my favorite things.
I'd like to ask you a couple of quick questions that we can kind of go over. That some of these are from your book and some of them aren't, but I found really interesting. One of the things that you have written is that our period, women's periods are the fifth vital sign. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Yeah. So if you go to the doctor, they're going to do a few things when you check in. They're going to check your blood pressure. They're going to check your pulse. They're going to check your weight and your height. These are all vital signs. These are basic things. Sometimes your respiratory rate, like how many times you're breathing a minute. And those give us a baseline of like, is your body in homeostasis? Is it pretty balanced? Or do you need to be admitted to the hospital? Right? And the period is information. It is telling me whether or not your hormones are pretty much in balance. And I didn't make up this concept. The American College of OBGYNs has declared this as a fifth vital sign as of, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. But it's so
after I went to medical school, that's why I didn't know this.
Yeah, exactly. It's really true though, because if you have a period every 28 days-ish, it lasts 4 to 5 days-ish. It's not super painful. You're not missing work or school. You're not bleeding through your pants and having accidents. That's a good indicator that overall, your adrenals are working pretty well. Your thyroid's not too far off. Your gut's not super a hot mess, inflamed. That your ovaries are functioning and producing their hormones because your overall environment, your body, feels safe enough to reproduce and create a new life. If your body is under stress, the first thing that it's going to do is stop reproduction. It doesn't want to reproduce in times of stress or infection or under major traumatic experiences. So if you're not having a regular period, say it's every couple months, or it's heavy and you're having accidents, or if it's painful and you have to, like, you know, take opioids and these hardcore drugs for days, then that is telling me something is going on. You need your thyroid evaluated, your gut, your adrenals, all the things. That's not what I was taught as a gynecologist. I was always taught to just, quote unquote, regulate your period with a birth control pill. And we now know that that's absolutely not true. We don't actually regulate that. You know, I think you and I did a whole podcast episode talking about this stuff for women who want to know more. But use that information from your body as information, not as an annoying symptom to cover up and get rid of. We need to just shift our thinking about periods.
Do women need to fast differently than men?
So this is a hot topic right now. Somebody's got a book out talking about fasting for your cycle. And I will say that your energy requirements shift throughout your month of your cycle. That's definitely a really big, important thing. And it has to do with how much hormones you're producing at which time of your cycle. So estrogen rises, falls, rises, and falls again. Progesterone rises in the second half. Testosterone kind of rises in the middle. So we get excited and we want to make a baby. Like, we have to have enough energy to make those hormones. But here's the kicker. Hormones are made from cholesterol. Cholesterol is the backbone of all of our steroid hormones, even our stress hormone, cortisol, and our aldosterone, our blood pressure hormone, all these hormones. And so we need healthy fats. To me, that's the most important aspect of a woman's diet in her reproductive years is healthy fats. And we learned this the hard way in the 90s with the low-fat, no-fat diet. Women's hormones were a hot mess. Periods went all kinds of wonky. We created this diagnosis called PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, after that, because we messed up women's hormones so drastically by removing the fat from their diets. So fat is really important. How much carbohydrates you eat is also important for your energy production during those times. And we know that you need a certain amount for certain time periods of the cycle. But for me, from my vast experience, like I've seen a lot of women over my time, the biggest key seems to be their energy level associated with their activities. So some women, they like can kill it in the gym and then they get to week three and they just want to rest and chill. They can't do their cardio workouts. They can't lift like they normally do. And it's because that's your body's innate intelligence again saying, hey, I'm trying to make a baby over here. I'm waiting for some fertilization to happen. Let's chill for a minute and conserve some resources in case that actually happens. And then when it doesn't happen, that the hormones drop and you feel different again. So we're just trying to fight our body's natural design to reproduce. We're mad at it because it's trying to reproduce, but that's all it really is trying to do. And fasting overall is only going to be beneficial for keeping those cells healthy, keeping them functioning well, regulating your blood sugar. But I agree with certain people, you don't want to do a longer fast, especially when you're in that third week when your energy reserves are on the lower end and you are feeling it. So I would say stick with your time-restricted feeding. Save a longer fast for when your estrogen is higher and you know because you feel it. You're like, yes, I want to go work out. I want to go outside and be active. I want to have a good time. That's usually like the middle of the, you know, first week and a half. But overall, I just want women to get back into tune with their bodies because we've trained them to really ignore everything their body's saying to them. And so if your body is saying, I need to rest, like figure out why. Is it because you're eating garbage food? Or is it because, yeah, you're in the third week of your cycle and you really do need to rest? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So just to kind of put everything together, you know, you are a functional gynecologist, do telemedicine with your patients now. And let's say somebody is listening today and they see their regular gynecologist, you know, they get their PAPs and all that type of stuff. How would they work in your treatment of them if they already have a gynecologist at home? Obviously, that's a good thing for them to have that because you're not going to, you can't examine them as telemedicine. But what can you add to their overall health care that maybe they're not getting today as a telemedicine functional gynecologist?
Yeah, that's a great question. I get a lot of second opinion consultations, people being told they need hysterectomies or invasive procedures, and they want to hear my take on it, or they keep giving birth control pills for their solution to their problems, and they realize it's not working. It's not helping. It's causing new issues. They want a different solution. That's a big thing. Or they have a multitude of issues going on and the medications they're being given, like thyroid medication or blood pressure medication, like really isn't shifting things or helping them feel better. And they know there's issues, like they feel bloated after they eat, they have little indigestion, they only poop twice a week, or they have loose stools when they're feeling stressed out, or they're not sleeping at night, or they wake up at 2 a.m. every morning. Those things, like doctors are really just poo-pooing. They're saying like, that's just part of aging. That's just menopause. That's just being female. And it's not true. None of those responses are appropriate. And so that's what I really help women with. Like, let's evaluate those systems and look at the overall picture of how they're interacting together. Like, what is the thyroid doing to your sex hormones? How is the gut involved in all of this? What about your job and your diet and your relationships? All those pieces, they are all affecting each other. It's like this big cogwheel. One thing moves, everything moves, even though we pretend they're in silos. You know, you see the endocrinologist for your thyroid and the gastroenterologist for your constipation and all the ologists, but really that's not how the body works. The body works in unison. They're all connected. And so that's what a functional gynecologist is going to help you see and tackle.
So I always end every podcast asking the guest for one specific piece of recommendation or piece of advice that you can give for people to remember once they finish listening to this. And what would that be, Dr. Tabitha Barber, functional gynecologist and author of the new book, Fast to Faith?
You can't heal a body you hate. So women are often trying to still get angry at their body and be in this constant fight against their body. Like, you're so fat, you're not strong enough, you can't do this. And then they expect change and all of this incredible transformation to happen. But that's not actually going to work. You have to love your body and give it what it needs and listen to it. It's screaming at you a lot of the times. Like, that's what all those symptoms are. So if you can really get into a different feeling toward your body and like, okay, I love you currently how you look in this overweight state, in this chronic pain state, whatever it may be, and love your body through that to a new you, that's the game changer.
Yes, be kind to yourself.
Yes.
Because if you're not kind to yourself, then nobody else will be. You have to start by being kind to yourself. I totally agree. So her new book is called Fast to Faith. Her name is Dr. Tabitha Barber. You can find her website is Dr. Tabitha, TABATHA.com. She also has a website for the book, don't you? I think fasttofaith.com. She's also on TikTok, she's on Facebook, she's on Instagram, on all the different social media sites. And she has a podcast called the Gutsy Gynecologist Podcast, which she was kind enough to have me on fairly recently as well. Thank you so much for joining me. Everybody, check out her new book, Fast to Faith. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
And my name is Dr. Anthony Yoon. This is the Holistic Plastic Surgery Show. If you enjoyed this podcast, if you can leave a rating or review on iTunes, it definitely helps me spread the word. And like usual, remember to always eat real food, use clean skincare, and auto-juvenate before you operate.
Do collagen supplements work? Yes, they do. There have been many studies, some with over 1,000 participants, which have shown that taking a daily hydrolyzed collagen supplement can be beneficial to the collagen in your skin. Now, our skin is composed 70 to 80% of collagen, and we tend to lose about 1% of the thickness of collagen every year. So what can you do about it? Well, in addition to eating healthy sources of protein, you can take a hydrolyzed collagen supplement every day, like my Yoon Beauty Supplemental Collagen. It's made with the highest quality bovine collagen peptides, is taste-free, and easily dissolves into hot drinks, like coffee, tea, or water. It can also be blended into a smoothie or a smoothie bowl. No beefy taste here. Check out our Yoon Beauty Supplemental Collagen at yoonbeauty.com and use the coupon code PODCAST to get 15% off your first order. We'll have a link in the podcast caption below.